Whoever you are, we welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carville-Zemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Lori McGee, who's serving as our worship associate, our music director, Hal Walker, and we're delighted to have a special musical guest with us this morning, Matt Witroba. Thank you for being here today. All month during the month of March, we conducted our annual stewardship campaign, and we're very grateful to all of you who responded to our invitation to make a pledge of financial support to the congregation. We know that things don't always end when we imagine that they'll end, and so we are extending our campaign one more week to give those of you who have not yet had an opportunity to respond to consider making your pledge to the congregation. And so we have invited one more person to offer a testimonial, as we did all March, about why and how they support the congregation. And this morning, we'll hear from Lisa Teal.
Good morning. I have a little story for you this morning I call A Tale of Tolerance and Acceptance. So I was raised in a very suburban, white, straight Catholic community. Not that there's anything wrong with it, being white, straight, suburban, or Catholic. But this community that I was raised in was perhaps particularly rigid, and there was a lot of pressure to be the same, a lot of pressure, and I didn't quite fit that mold. So my idea of community growing up was judgment, and so just community wasn't very appealing to me. So I grew up very isolated and, you know, kind of really withdrawn. And as I, you know, became a young adult, I started getting little glimpses of a different type of community, you know, following the Grateful Dead and things like that, and seeing that community could mean something different. But in my mid to late 20s, I found this church, and, you know, I've been coming ever since and haven't really thought about why until recently. You know, about 6 months ago, I have a nephew who was born with some severe birth defects, and about 6 months ago, he did his first Hogwarts, which, as most of you know, is run and populated mostly by members of this congregation. And I was asking him afterwards, you know, what'd you think of the whole experience? And he was very pensive, and, you know, he thought for a minute and looked at me and said, you know, this was the first time in my whole life where people didn't stare at me like I had six heads. And I was just so struck by that. I was like, wow. You know, I was just so full of pride for this congregation, for this community, and so full of gratitude. And it dawned on me that that's why I've been coming here ever since. It's given me this new idea of what community can be. And so it's really, you know, out of that gratitude that we pledge to keep this community going. So thank you.
Said the most beautiful thing we can experience is the mysterious. We light our chalice this morning in celebration of all the mysteries.
I have been interested in creation stories since I first heard the story of Adam and Eve when I was very small. Even then, at the tender age of 5 or 6, I didn't believe it as truth, although I was clearly supposed to. When I learned about evolution in school, it rang with more truth than the biblical story, but still, I thought there must be something more. Fast forward several decades, and I encountered the idea of evolutionary creationism, the theory that capital G God created evolution as the process for humankind to develop. While I don't necessarily believe in capital G God, I think the theory itself has merit. What if there is some prime mover, if you will, that created the universe, set it up with the building blocks of life, and then just let things take their course? The marriage of creationism and evolution seems to me an appropriate response to the vast divide that these two beliefs can create. Where do you think we come from? Come, let us worship together.
Kate Coomerly, Allison Norris, Leah Gillig, and Hal will be helping with the time for all ages this morning. The thing about mystery is that we don't know what it is. And we don't know what point of view mystery might have, if mystery could have a point of view. This time for all ages is a playful exploration of what mystery's point of view might be.
Once upon a time.
A long time ago.
A very, very long time ago. Like before your parents were even born.
There was a mystery.
She was a great mystery.
And nobody understood or appreciated him.
Mainly because there was no one else around to appreciate or understand much of anything.
For a long, long time, nothing happened.
The great mystery waited.
And waited.
And waited some more.
Until at last she said,
I'm bored.
And so the mystery set the stars in the heaven.
And planets to circle the stars.
And comets to wander to and fro.
And it was all very beautiful.
But after a couple of billion years of watching, the mystery decided it was still
boring.
The mystery was lonely.
It wanted someone to play with.
So it looked among all the stars and planets.
But some of the stars were
too hot.
And others were
too cool.
And some of the planets were
too big.
And others were
too little.
But finally she found one that was
just right.
The planet was covered with water.
But there were huge chunks of land sticking out.
And even mountains and plains and rivers.
Best of all, there were tiny, tiny creatures called protozoa.
That lived and squirmed in the water.
Come play with me,
the mystery said.
But the protozoa just kept on squirming like they hadn't even heard him.
Which isn't surprising.
Because they didn't have any ears.
After another couple of billion years of watching the stars and planets and comets.
And the squirming protozoa.
The squirming protozoa began to change.
They grew. They evolved.
And eventually there were all kinds of different animals.
In the seas and on the land.
In mountains and rivers.
There were cows that said moo.
And sheep that said baa.
And three singing pigs said la la la.
No, no, that isn't right. Pigs say oink all day and night.
Oh, oink.
Oink.
Oink. But the idea of singing pigs got the mystery thinking.
Maybe some of the animals could use their mouths for singing or talking, as well as eating.
They would make great playmates.
So he waited and watched as the animals continued to evolve.
And sure enough, after another bazillion years, she saw them.
The new creatures had problems, though.
They didn't have enough fur, so they were cold much of the time.
They didn't have big teeth or sharp claws, so they had trouble getting food to eat.
So the mystery gave them some ideas for making fires and growing crops.
And for a while, everything just went great.
The new creatures called themselves humans, which means from the earth.
And for a long time, the humans lived in balance with the other creatures.
The mystery enjoyed watching the humans and giving them new ideas.
But she was also always careful to make sure that the humans never saw her or heard her directly.
Because then he wouldn't be a mystery anymore.
The humans were curious, though, and wanted to know more about the mystery.
Was the mystery at all human, like they were?
Was the mystery male or female or something else entirely?
Did the mystery care about them?
The humans had lots of other questions, too, like,
where do we come from?
What are we supposed to do with our lives?
Why do people get sick, suffer, and die?
But the mystery was silent about these things.
More time passed, and the humans kept evolving.
They gathered themselves together in cities and built roads to connect the cities.
They planted huge fields of crops and built machines to harvest the crops.
And they built other machines for traveling on the roads.
And they took the cows and sheep and pigs and penned them up to use for food.
And they argued a lot about what they were supposed to be doing with their lives.
Soon the world was filled with humans.
There was no room for wild animals.
The cows and sheep and pigs got more and more crowded in their pens.
The humans were running out of room too.
Some thought there was no more room for mystery either.
When the mystery realized that the humans thought they had figured out everything for themselves, it became very sad.
Some of the humans claimed that the mystery was angry, and if everybody didn't do what they said, it would destroy them.
Others said that they didn't need the mystery anymore. They could do fine on their own.
It seemed that the humans were too busy building and arguing to play anymore.
The mystery wanted to say something. But she knew her voice would terrify the humans.
He also believed that they would argue about the meaning of his words.
They couldn't even agree on what thou shalt not kill or love your enemies meant.
And besides, she knew that simply making the humans do what she wanted would take the fun out of playing.
But maybe there was another way.
The mystery knew that the humans wouldn't listen to her no matter how loudly or clearly she spoke.
Maybe instead of telling the humans what to do in a loud voice like thunder, he should use a softer voice like a whisper.
Maybe instead of speaking to their ears, he should speak to their hearts.
Maybe instead of using words, she should use feelings.
And that is exactly what it did.
If you listen very closely, you will hear what the mystery is saying to you.
Don't listen with your ears. Listen with your heart.
Think about what you feel when you consider this beautiful planet our home.
Do you feel joy?
Do you feel a sense of wonder?
Do you feel thankful?
Do you feel love?
Each of these feelings is a part of the mystery, because each of us is part of the mystery.
When we recognize and act on our feelings of joy, wonder, thanksgiving, and love,
then the mystery will play with us and through us for a long, long time to come.
Amen.
Shalom,
and blessed be.
Words to lead us into a time of silence, meditation, and prayer from Gordon McKeeman. How does one address a mystery? Cautiously. Let us go cautiously to the end of our certainty, to the boundary of all we know, to the rim of uncertainty, to the perimeter of the unknown which surrounds us. Reverently, let us go with a sense of awe, a feeling of approaching the powerful holy whose lightning slashes the sky, whose persistence splits concrete with green sprouts, whose miracles are present in every place and every moment. Helpfully, out of need for wholeness in our own lives, the reconciliation of mind and heart, the conjunction of reason and passion, the intersection of the timeless with time. Quietly, for no words will explain the inarticulate or summon the presence that is always present, even in our absence. But what shall we say? Anything. Any anger, any hope, any fear, any joy, any request, any word that comes from the depth of being addressed to being itself. Or perhaps nothing. No complaint, no request, no entreaty, no thanksgiving, no praise, no blame, no pretense. No pretense of knowing or not knowing. Simply be in the intimate presence of mystery. Unashamed, unadorned, unafraid. And then at the end, say Amen. We'll keep silence for a few moments together. And I invite you to join with me now in the spirit of prayer. Spirit of life and of love, spirit of mystery and wonder, our lives are so full. Every day, for many of us, brings more to do than we can possibly hope to accomplish. And so, we move from one thing to the next, doing our best to move through the tasks, to be sure that we cross all of our T's and dot all of our I's, lest we let down anyone else, lest we disappoint ourselves. And yet, we gather here today remembering that being is just as important as doing. That being is more important than doing. And so today we take time just to be here in this moment, just to be here in this moment now, just to be here in this moment, now, together. For this, we are grateful. Amen, and blessed be.
Think about mystery a lot, especially at funerals. And this song was first conceived. I conceived this song first at my grandmother's funeral, who lived a long and wonderful life. And you start thinking of all the big questions at those such occasions. And on this particular one, started thinking about what it meant to live forever and everybody's different idea of what that means. And when I looked out into this amazing congregation of people who had gathered at her funeral, I saw my grandmother's love in the eyes of the 5-year-olds and the 35-year-olds and the 85-year-olds. And I knew in that instant that the more we love when we're alive, the longer we'll live forever. And this song came to me just 10 years later. Has a lot of great repeating lines, and if you've ever seen me sing before, you know that the audience is very much part of the show. So please, if you catch on to any of these lines, I'd love for you to sing along. The two repeating lines in the verse is "How will I leave?" and "I" or is and "That's how I'll leave this earth." I'll build from the lessons I learned in my youth. How will I leave? And open my eyes and my heart to the truth. That's how I'll leave this earth. How will I leave? How will I leave this earth? When it comes my time to go, how will they measure my worth? I will live on, and those that I touched while I lived, in this journey of life from my death to my birth, that's how I'll leave this earth. You're dying to sing that last line, so let's do it. So I sing, in this journey of life from my death to my birth, that's how I'll leave. That's how I'll leave this earth. It's choice and not chance that has brought me along. How will I leave? And showed me the difference between right and wrong. That's how I'll leave this earth. How will I leave? How will I leave this earth? When it comes my time to go, how will they measure my worth? I will live on, and those that I touched while I lived, in this journey of life from my death to my birth, that's how I'll leave this earth. In this journey of life from my death to my birth, that's how I'll leave this earth. Some say we'll live on up in heaven above. How will I leave? I will live on through the ones that I loved. That's how I'll leave this earth. How will I leave? How will I leave this earth? When it comes my time to go, how will they measure my worth? I will live on, and those that I touched while I lived, in this journey of life from my death to my birth, that's how I'll leave this earth. In this journey of life from my death to my birth, that's how I'll leave this earth.
Long, long ago, before anything was created, when everything was just darkness, the great god Kukulkan called the other gods together in a council and said, "We need something. We're missing something." So they thought and they thought, and they decided to create the universe, all the stars and the heavens and the galaxies and the planets and comets and everything that we know to be the universe. And they saw that it was good. And after a while, they came together and said, "This is good, but we still need something." So they decided to create the earth. And they created all the water and the land and the mountains and the rivers and the streams, the trees. And they decided to populate the earth. So they created animals, all the animals that we see, the rabbits and the deer and the foxes, all of the animals of the earth were created. And this was good too. But they still were missing something. So they thought and they thought and they thought and they said, "You know, what we need to survive as gods is someone to know that we're here. Someone to worship us, someone to pray to us, someone to show respect and offerings." So they decided to create human beings. And they thought, what better material to create human beings than this earth that they just created? So they scooped up some land and they scooped up some water and they fashioned some humans out of mud. But they soon realized that this was a mistake because these men of mud didn't have any form and they were all mushy and they couldn't think. So they reached down and scrubbed them out. Said, "No, that's not going to work. We need something else." So they looked around and they looked around and they thought, "Oh, how about wood? How about the trees? These trees that grow so tall and give so much. They give shelter and they give fire. Let's try that." So they created man out of wood. And these men were good at first. They were a little stiff. They were a little like dolls, like marionettes, you can imagine. And they lived a long time and they populated the earth. And the earth was covered with men and women and children made of wood. But the problem is they didn't respect the gods. They didn't pray. They didn't respect their things in their house. They abused their pots and pans. And they abused their animals. And they weren't good. So the God said, "No, this is not going to work. We can't have this." So they sent a great flood. And a great flood filled the earth with water. And only the very tops of the trees were poking out. And some of the men of wood were able to scramble up to the tippy tops of the trees. And these men of wood became the monkeys in the trees. The monkeys that are there to remind us, this is how we are not supposed to be. We're supposed to respect the gods and show offerings, give offerings, and pray. So the God said, "Okay, we need to do this again. Let's try it one more time." And they looked around and they looked around and they saw these beautiful grains of corn, the white corn and the yellow corn. And they said, "Let's try this. Let's try this corn." So they took the corn and they put it on the grinding stone and they ground it very finely with love and care and attention. And they scooped up some water from the earth, the life-giving water, and they mixed it all together. And these men of corn, of the white corn and the yellow corn and the life-giving water, they were the humans that prayed and worshiped and populated the earth and sent their families and tribes to all the four corners of the earth and became the human beings. But they knew and saw everything there was to know and see. And the gods thought about this, and they came together, and they said, "If these human beings know all that we know and see all that we see, won't they strive to be like gods themselves? We can't have that." So they blew a mist over the earth, a veil that covered the eyes of these human beings, so they could only see so far, so they could only know so much, so they would remember to be humble. So they would know that their power was not of God's. And this was good.
Cultures around the world and throughout time have created creation myths an ancient Mayan creation myth, and this one from the Maori natives of New Zealand. From nothing the begetting, from nothing the increase, from nothing the abundance, the power of increasing the living breath, it dwelt within empty space and produced the atmosphere which is above us, the atmosphere which floats above the earth. The great firmament above us dwelt with the early dawn, and the moon sprung forth. The atmosphere above us dwelt with the heat, and then produced the sun. They were thrown up above as the chief eyes of heaven. Then the heavens became light, the early dawn, the early day, the midday, the blaze of day from the sky. I've discovered an interesting paradox in myself as I've contemplated my own relationship to mystery. For as long as I can remember, I have disliked mystery novels. I think the reason is because I know that the conclusion will tell me what happened, and I can't stand the suspense. And so I have had more times than I can count trying to read a mystery where I stay up way too late devouring the book to get to the end so I know how the mystery is revealed. It's stressful for me. On the other hand, for as long as I can remember, I have been interested in cosmic mystery. When I was in the 9th grade, one of my best friends and I would spend hours on the phone late into the night talking about the origins of the universe. And every time I think of him, I can't help but remember those late night phone calls. I wonder if the reason I'm drawn to ponder mystery is because I'm skeptical that it will all finally be revealed in the end. And that frees me to be comfortable with the unknowing. I'm not sure. I am sure, though, that I have had mystical experiences during which I have felt a sense of union with something larger than myself, something that I'm comfortable naming as mystery. Mystery with a capital M. A couple of years ago, we administered a survey to the congregation asking you about your worship preferences and your theological beliefs. One of the questions we asked you was whether you have ever had a mystical experience that had personal spiritual meaning to you. Over 70% of the people under the age of 50 who completed the survey said, yes, I have had a mystical experience. Only 52% of the people between 60 and 69 said that they had, 50 and 69 said that they had had such an experience. And only 39% of the people over age 70 said that they had had such experiences. These numbers, these differences in our experience, confirm the larger trend that we're seeing in Unitarian Universalism amongst younger people who have are expressing greater interest in spirituality than those of previous generations have, and those who are older in Unitarian Universalism, many of those who are older expressed today. The way in which we express that sense of spirituality varies greatly amongst us. The Unitarian Universalist minister and public theologian Forrest Church said, he described this plurality really well when he said, God is not God's name. God is not God's name. He said, God is our name for that which is greater than all and yet present in each. Call it what you will. Among us gathered in this room, we would identify many names for that something which is within, between, among, and beyond us. Some of us would disavow any names. Some of us would name that something God, others Gaia. What else might you name it? Just call them out. Life.
Yahweh.
Goddess.
Spirit.
Source. Others might say, beloved community. Mystery. So many names. Those of us who would be comfortable calling that something mystery can trace our roots back to the transcendentalists. The Transcendentalists were a loose group of spiritual seekers within Unitarianism, mostly, though there were some Universalists in the lot. And they believed that it was possible for each person to have a direct revelation of the divine. In some ways, our own moment in history is not that dissimilar to the Transcendentalists. For many of the Transcendentalists were younger folks coming up into Unitarianism, and they were expressing a spirituality that those who were more established in the faith were uncomfortable with. What is this mystery that you speak of? But the Transcendentalists wouldn't be dissuaded, and so they started talking, and they started writing, and they started getting congregations where they could preach their message. They said, every person can have a direct revelation of the divine. The Transcendentalists believed even more than Scripture, even more than the tradition of the church, individual human experience of the holy could be trusted when it comes to spiritual truth. Their goal was not to discount the role of reason in religion, but rather to lift up the roles of feeling and intuition. Affirming the original goodness of human life, they believed that people could be trusted to reflect on their own experiences of connection with the divine, and that the result of their reflection would undoubtedly point the way to greater wholeness. The Transcendentalist influence can be clearly seen in contemporary Unitarian Universalism. Though the seven principles are much better known, the six sources of Unitarian Universalism describe the traditions we draw upon in our way of being religious. The first source clearly refers to our Transcendentalist heritage. Direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. The first part of that phrase, direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder, speaks to our sense that revelation is not sealed. The universe is always revealing itself, and we can experience that revelation directly for ourselves. The last part of the phrase describes something of the quality of those experiences. We're talking about experiences that move us to a renewal of the spirit, and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. When I ask people to describe such experiences, they often talk to me about peak moments, of being present at the moment of birth, of being present at the moment of death. They talk about mystical experiences out in the natural world. And that, by the way, is another link back to the Transcendentalists. They were very interested in connecting with that something larger out under the stars and in the forests and by the sea. I've also heard people describe such moments occurring when listening to or making music, when joined with other people in union, working for some larger purpose that matters, and sometimes when participating in religious ritual. However they occur, such moments are deeply moving for those of us who experience them, often creating a sense of union with each and with all. The middle part of that phrase, affirmed in all cultures, speaks to our sense that the experience of mystery and wonder is universal. One of the places we see that clearly is in the prevalence of creation myths. Throughout time and around the world, people have created creation myths. Where do we come from? Marcelo Gleiser is a professor of physics and astronomy at Dartmouth College, and he's the author of a book which begins with this question. He says that whenever we begin asking about our own origins, we are implicitly asking about the origins of the universe itself. His book tells the scientific story of creation. However, curiously, his book starts with creation myths. He starts there because he believes that while there are vast differences, to be sure, creation myths and the modern scientific creation story do share resonances. In his extensive study of creation myths, he has found that they can be classified into two groups with five types. And this is wonderful because I don't know, I haven't seen this approach to creation myths before, classifying them. So it was wonderful for me to dive into his understanding. He says the two groups are no creation myths and creation myths. And in the no creation myths, he says the universe can be understood to be not be created at all, but to have always existed. And so he points to an ancient Jain teaching in which an ancient Jain scholar creates this very lucid argument stating that the universe could not have been created and must be understood to have always been, no beginning, and to always be, no end. Another type of eternal universe mythology comes from ancient Hindu teachings, which describe creation and destruction over and over and over again, an endless cycle, a different kind of endless, no beginning, no end, with endless creation and destruction repeating itself. No creation myths. And then there are creation myths. These types of creation myths are that we're more familiar with in the West, I think. In this grouping, Gleiser says that there are three distinct types. The first assumes a creator god or gods or goddesses. So the creation story from the Popol Vuh that Lori told us is one example. The creation story in Genesis is another. A second kind of creation myth describes the act of creation minus a creator. In this type, there are no gods or goddesses fashioning creation. Rather, he says, out of a primordial urge to exist, the cosmos burst into existence on its own. The Maori creation story that I shared with you from New Zealand is an example of this type. The third type of creation myth asserts that creation resulted from the tension between being and non-being rubbing up against each other. Again, in this type, there are no gods or goddesses responsible, but rather creation is said to emerge as order coalesces out of chaos. This type is expressed in an ancient Taoist passage which begins, "In the beginning there was chaos, and out of it came pure light." Gleiser says he finds value in these ancient creation myths because when you take them together as a collective, they encompass all of the logical answers about how the universe began. And taken together, they provide evidence for some degree of universality in human thought. Further, he says, these myths are all expressions of awe at the mystery of creation. Gleiser believes that the same experience of awe that leads to the creation of creation myths is what motivates the scientific creative process. That awe is what drives the quest for truth. Where do we come from? Some believe that science will eventually be able to write the answer to that question with empirical evidence. Maybe so. But for now, Gleiser says, if you go all the way back, if you keep going back to the search for the beginning, the boundaries between science and myth start to get a little blurry. In the way he understands science to be engaged in a process of myth-making, the purpose is for sustaining the creative scientific process. Should a time come when all of the questions about the origins of life, of the universe, of a multiverse are answered, then, he says, there will be no more need for myths. But for now, the quest continues. Where do we come from? In the beginning, mystery. From mystery we come. To mystery we will return. In the days of our living, we seek to understand. We have big questions that have no answers. Questions like, what is mystery? Today you have heard several points of view expressed in this service. Here's my point of view. I see mystery as the source of life. I see mystery as a force of life, propelling life on in ways that I do not always understand, but which have meaning to me nonetheless. And I see mystery as a power. Mystery is a power that moves me. Mystery is a power that touches me. When I experience it directly, mystery inspires me. Inspires seeking and learning, inspires questing and growing, inspires feelings. Feelings like joy, wonder, awe, gratitude, and love. I can't say just exactly what mystery is, but this is my experience. When I have felt it directly, I've known mystery to move me. So that's what mystery means to me. And the question for you to ponder, what does mystery mean to you? Amen and blessed be. Will the ushers please come forward? This is a congregation of free thinkers, a congregation in which there is complete freedom of thought. We do not all believe the same things, but we love alike. And this congregation is an expression of that love. If you are at home here, if this is a place that matters to you, that helps you live a life of greater service, integrity, joy, and love, and you have not yet done so, consider making a financial pledge of support to support the work of this congregation. Do justly this day and all days. Be of good will. Walk humbly before the mysteries of life and before that gulf which separates us from the ideals we profess. Live in peace and praise. Our day is just beginning, so be it.